of racism that is completely contrary to Canadian values, certainly the NDP's values, and here's where the line is, and here's where it's crossed, and here's how to be absolutely outspoken in your politics without coming at the expense of, like, the daily safety of, like, less than 1% of Canadians. I'm sorry, I'm on my high horse here, but, like, I know that there are a lot of people, I will never try to claim to speak for every Jew in Canada, but there's a lot of people, like, who will never forget this. Never forget that when this happened, to the extent that it's happening, the NDP couldn't murmur, like, nothing but a few tweets here and there. So it would be a very cerebral, strategic, cynical thing. I would be voting NDP purely in a practical sense. I have to swallow my emotions and not tell anyone. Team, if you don't vote at all, what's the hypothetical justification? Julian.
No, I consider not voting every election. I'm always super tempted not to vote just because A, it's easier, and B, technically the one vote would not make a difference. And I hate to admit that, but it's true, though, because, like, how many Canadian elections do you know that are decided by one single vote?
But if everybody thinks that, then nobody votes.
I know. I'm not advocating for not voting. I'm just saying, like, my individual vote, like, we could technically do without it.
See, you're the young people that we talked about at the beginning of this episode, where we're saying, yeah, you can court the young vote, but they just don't vote. That's exactly what you're describing.
Like we mentioned earlier, there's one person on this panel who is not going to vote today, and it's because they legally can't. And Noor, as we conclude this experiment today, and a lot of people, like thousands of people listening to this, can still head to the polls and do what you cannot, what do you have to say to them hypothetically?
Hypothetically? No. I don't know. You should vote. Like, I have never, ever, ever had the chance to. Maybe I'm a weird person who is, like, always like, oh, I wish I could vote.
Can you explain that in terms of personal biography? Why have you never had the chance to vote?
I've never had the chance to vote because I grew up in Qatar and there's a king. I don't vote for the king. I'm not a citizen. And then in Lebanon, it's a democracy, but We're not particularly good with elections.
It's a democracy.
Yeah.
It's getting better.
It's getting much better. There are periods of times where we don't have a president for like two f***ing years, which is embarrassing, which is crazy, but it happens. I haven't voted because I turned 18 and there was one Lebanese election that happened and I was here and I couldn't vote. Like, I showed up and they were like, you have to register. And there was just like a whole lot of complications. I've never voted. There are so many people on this earth who can't ever vote, will never vote, because they live in places that will never grant them the privilege or the opportunity to have a say in the world that they live in. And I feel like people here really take it for granted. Like, very, very much. Honestly, like, I feel my voice shaking because I get so emotional talking about it just because I want to vote so bad. And I feel like hearing people around me feeling so dissatisfied with their lives, and it's like you have one thing, one lever you can pull, and you just don't. Yeah, it frustrates me. Not only because I want to vote, but because my life as a non-voter is decided by the people who do vote, right? As an immigrant, I have no say over anything that happens here. Am I still affected by horrible housing prices? Yeah. Am I still affected by daily changes to the immigration system? Yeah. Like, I still am affected by so many of these things. Even if you're not voting for yourself, you're voting for the people who can't in this country, but also for the people across this globe who will never have the chance to, who dream of voting. And one of those people is me.
Damn. I feel like a dick now.
Yeah. It only took, like, half a cry to get you there.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
People throughout history will and have and are willing to fight and die.
Literally die.
For that little grain of self-determination. And I think you have to have some relationship with what it is to not have that.
Yeah.
To feel the way that what you just expressed. And I think actually the Canadians are getting a little taste of that, because the wind that is influencing all of this and my outrage at the beginning is just like, it's not even like an American who can say, well, I didn't vote for Trump. Like, that was something that happened completely outside of
yeah.
you know, anything that I have any rights or any kind of say in. You can't do anything about it here mm-hmm. except live under those terms.
Mm-hmm.
And the powerlessness of that feels dehumanizing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're getting a little taste. So that cynicism that people express is like, they don't know what cynicism is. Like, to actually live where you're dancing to a tune that you just have nothing to do with. You can't set it. You just have to eat what's served to you. And then to actually compare that to a place where, in our flawed way, you do get to make a selection and say, oh, what's the difference?
Totally.
Julian, you should be so... no, it's...
No, don't shame him anymore.
Well, I did vote. To be fair, I've never missed an election.
It's the new guy, too. It's just bullying.
I know. I'm a victim.
All right. I hate when journalists turn into these, like, school teachers and end by saying, go vote. But I don't know. Go vote anyhow. This is a good election. I'll say this before we go. This team killed it, this election. I love our weird offering, like the variety of things we gave people, from reporting to analysis to vetting, diversity of voices, the weird we did. I just think it was like the greatest variety of different kinds of election coverage. So anyhow, thanks, everybody.
Support us at CanadaLand.com/join.
Do it now. That's your Canada Land on this election day. Thank you for listening. Listen, tomorrow, check out our politics edition. Our politics team will be up all night tonight, election night, to bring you tomorrow's show. They'll tell you who won, of course, but they'll also go through blow by blow everything that happens tonight on this very consequential election night. That's tomorrow on our politics edition. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing by Tristan Capicchione. Today's episode was fact-checked by Julian Abraham. Max Collins is our director of audio. I am the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So Called. Syndication's handled by CFUV, 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it.
Canada Land, funded by you.
I'm Jesse Brown, and today we are talking about the news, and we'll talk about the long history of Mark Carney's short fuse.
Snippy, abrupt, shouty. Shouty is a good one.
Wait for that. Harrison Lohman with me in studio, managing editor at The Hub and host of the Full Press podcast. Welcome to the show.
It's so nice to be here, Jesse. I love being in this little unit here. It's kind of like a bomb bunker of sorts.
It's the confession booth. It's the interrogation booth. It's lit like a high school prom limo. Harrison, here's how people in the press have been describing Mark Carney.
I really remember him most of all, if at all, as a mild-mannered Bank of England governor.
His manner is so even.
Managerial.
Yeah, it's so managerial.
About as exciting as a bowl of oatmeal.
An adult in the room.
Calmer, more rational option.
The adult in the room.
Pair of steady hands.
A sober central banker.
Of technocratic expertise, of calm, of soberness.
The kind of adult behavior, the kind of steadiness.
The antithesis to Donald Trump.
He's actually the opposite of the drama that we're seeing from Trump. And he is, to some degree, also the opposite of the drama that we've seen from Poilievre.
It goes on from there, Harrison. Here's Policy Magazine. Sane, grown up, non-combustible. Is Mark Carney the anti-Trump? the most understated, hyper-coherent Mark Carney, sane, unflappable, worldly opposite of the combustible, relentlessly rampaging president, spectacularly, sublimely boring. His reasonable, logical sang-froid translates as a sort of mesmerizing political Xanax. Here's Bloomberg. Carney's demeanor has helped his image as the anti-Trump candidate. He speaks slowly and calmly at campaign events. Here's the Star. Voters are choosing a cerebral bureaucrat over a mercurial demagogue. He talks analytically and methodically. Here's the Globe and Mail. He might as well have showed up with a T-shirt with "adult in the room" emblazoned across the chest. Here's the Walrus, Mark Carney's secret weapon, being reasonable. Here's the Globe and Mail, cool-headed, managerial prime minister, capable of growing into the job with time. Here's the Star again, technical and restrained, an avatar of calm and reason. I was expansive in this because these are all recent headlines. In the very short time that Carney has been in politics, we have had kind of a barrage of descriptions and images. I think it's compatible with how he's been presenting himself to Canadians, and I think it is central to his appeal right now. This is really scratching an itch for Canadians to see somebody who seems so calm and even-tempered. However, Harrison, he was not always spoken of this way. Are you aware of some of this?
I actually weirdly interviewed Jacob Rees-Mogg, who's like his biggest hater in the UK. He's a Brexiteer MP. And I, you know, I've read some stuff about him being snippy. I would say it in a British accent because that's sort of snippy, abrupt, shouty. Shouty is a good one. So, yes, there's some media reports in terms of what he was like across the pond, I guess you could say.
I got curious. And, you know, I was very cognizant of the fact that the Canadian media did not find the blackface photos of Trudeau. It was an American. It was Time magazine that found that. The things might be hiding in plain sight. This is not an investigation of Mark Carney. We didn't go and do our own original reporting here on his past. I was just curious on this, our media criticism show, what has the media said about Carney before this highly manicured and controlled transition to Canadian politics? Because he's been a public guy for many years. And I'm just going to relay to you the very different characterization of him throughout the years, going back to 2008. This is 2008 when he was the governor of the Bank of Canada. In a very positive piece in the Ottawa Citizen, there's just a brief mention. Among those who have worked for him, Mr. Carney has the reputation of being a taskmaster with a sometimes fiery temper that disappears as quickly as it appears. He's a tough customer, said one government official. If he doesn't agree with you, he'll take you on. At the same time, he's not a guy who will keep a file of your sins. He likes you to know who's boss, and he has an ego, but a guy doesn't get where he's got at his age without an ego. Mr. Carney, adds the official, is not given to either profanity or apology. He won't say that he's wrong, but he'll say, let me buy you a beer. It's kind of an old-fashioned way of apologizing. All right, that's 2008. Then he goes to the UK, where he's the governor of the Bank of England. Larry Elliott was the economics editor of The Guardian, and he recently wrote a piece called What Can Canada Expect from Its Next Prime Minister? Here's the Mark Carney I knew. He was charming and self-confident, but he had a volcanic temper. From the moment he took over as governor, it was clear Carney considered himself to be the smartest man in the room and wanted to make sure everybody knew it. He was not a man to suffer fools gladly. Journalists sometimes caught a glimpse of his volcanic temper, and bank staff were wary of getting on the wrong side of him. As a governor, he was respected, but not especially liked. Our reporter, Julian Abraham, reached out to Larry Elliott, like, what is this volcanic temper that you're talking about here? Why were staff wary of him? And here's what Larry Elliott said to Canada Land's Julian. Hi, Julian. I was there on a couple of occasions at off-the-record briefings when Carney really lost it with journalistic colleagues. I can't be more specific than that, I guess because it was off the record, but suffice to say that the F word was liberally used. So maybe he became more used to profanity. This keeps going, okay? Just different people rating in different contexts, some positive pieces, some negative, but these are the kind of features where people like spend time with him, talk to his employees, like really like biographical profiles.
Which we haven't seen much here.
Which we have not seen much of, okay? So here's Scott Hamilton used to report for Bloomberg News in London, England. Observers of Carney also note a flip side, a temper that can come out of the blue. One official says people on the receiving end can feel like they're being tasered. They can feel like they're being tasered. A bit more detail on this, again, from his time in the UK in a Financial Times piece. Focus turns to Carney's management style. Now, this was a piece about his managerial style. Bank of England officials at risk of groupthink when they serve the boss what they think he wants to hear. Here's what this piece said. Mr. Carney does not like surprises. There are complaints that Mr. Carney can turn from approachable to snippy, abrupt, and shouty, particularly when confronted by the unexpected. One former official says bank staff were warned of this trait by officials at the Bank of Canada, but it was still unnerving to witness. It was not a problem with senior managers, this is a quote, but it was more objectionable when directed at junior staff. He can turn from approachable to shouty. He's kind of charming, but don't f*** with him, says Nigel Topping, the UK climate diplomat who worked with Carney. The danger with the governor's style, according to outsiders, is that officials risk falling victim to Carney think, in which they serve the boss what they think he wants to hear. Because they're afraid of getting tasered or yelled at, I guess. This tasering thing comes up again in 2020 in a Toronto Star piece. While businesslike, he could be unforgiving. Carney sometimes interrupted staff during presentations and demanded they try again later when they're better prepared. In contrast to his easygoing persona in public, they got to know his temper too. Being on the receiving end of sudden flashes of fury became known as, quote, getting tasered.
That's so weird that that same line reappears.
Well, it suggests to me that, like, if your temper is such that people have a word for what happens when Jesse gets mad and berates people, then it's not that weird that that would come up multiple times. I want to say something that I think a lot of people are thinking. Okay, maybe that's consistent with what a lot of people like about Carney. That after having a prime minister who carefully explains things like we're like little school children.
Like I said, immigration is based on demand. When we set our targets, we look at every province and territory.
This guy's matter of fact. He's no nonsense. He tells it like it is.
I'll take that as a no then.
No, you'll take that as a very comprehensive answer to your question.
And that's what they like about him. And I think that that's totally fine. People can make up their own minds. Is this disqualifying? Does this make you like him more? But it is very different. It's a very different characterization. And it's followed him throughout his career. And it just sort of mysteriously has stopped in Canada, except, you know, there's like Warren Kinsella and National Post. There's like people who are obviously trying to write anti-Carney pieces because they want him to lose who are bringing it up. And so easy to kind of dismiss that until you go back and look at the record of where they're getting it from. I'm highlighting it, Harrison, not because I think it's going to be very consequential for what happens in a few days, but like almost just to earmark it for like, it looks like the guy's going to win. And I wonder, as we get to know him better and see him operating, if this is not going to be like a theme throughout, like something to watch for in how he conducts himself.
Well, you got a glimpse of it in that press conference with Rosemary Barton, right? Where she questioned his business dealings and conflict of interest. And he said the famous line,
"Look inside yourself, Rosemary."
So you got it there.
Yeah. And that's what everyone said, snippy.
Snippy. So from what I've heard, and I've spoken to people who have covered him when he was at Bank of Canada, while Polyev might find journalists biased, Carney finds them pesky, like difficult. It's like this annoying hurdle you have to hop over to get, I don't know, your policy, your idea, your decision to the finish line. I wonder, and it's something we've talked about the Hub, how he'll feel confronted by the fact that you're not going to get information and stats, et cetera, as quickly as you could in the private sector. You're going to have to deal with what could be a very large caucus with various interests and weird personalities that you have to placate and, you know, birthdays you have to remember, etc. And I wonder if, you know, that anger comes to head there.
That's an excellent point. And we're relying a lot on his experience. Like, that's a big selling point, is that this guy has tons of experience. But it is worth noting that his experience is in a very different field. You know, finance is very male, very hierarchical. And he's been at the top of that hierarchy for like most of his career. He's like a celebrated golden boy of finance. And like, I know people in finance, economics, banking, like it's very like follow the leader kind of a place. It is very different than building consensus and dealing with the realities of politics. Like, you know, like the kind of demanding stuff we're reading about here, like presentation's not ready, go home and come back when you're ready. It is different. Like, here's how Stephen Maher described that incident. Stephen Maher writing for The Star, Carney, who is used to much more deferential coverage from the financial press, even in his interactions with the press.
Yeah, those press conferences are, you know, tell us what you've decided today. Thank you.
They sit at the feet of the governor of the bank, has several times lost his cool when political journalists ask him reasonable and completely routine and foreseeable questions about the details of his transition from private to public life. There's every reason to think potential conflicts can be managed and every reason to ask him to explain that before Canadians go to the polls. By taking these questions as an affront to his personal honor, Carney drew attention to them, moving them from the back pages to the front page. And then Marr says, well, it's just his political inexperience. Okay, maybe. I'll say this, though. The appeal of Carney to the millions of Canadians who are very glad to see this guy enter the stage is they don't have to vote for the Liberal Party. They can vote for this guy, this calm, rational, experienced guy. And if he's not that guy, if he's a guy with a short fuse who does not suffer fools gladly, Harrison, after the break, we're going to talk about the specific fool who you have to suffer if this is your job. One might even say that this is a fool-suffering job. That is like the ballot box question is, can you suffer this specific fool? That's after the break. What we hear again and again is that there's one issue this election, and that issue is who can handle Trump? And we see it in the positive coverage. Who can be cool-headed? Who can be the anti-Trump? Who can be the person who won't become an enemy to Trump that Trump feels he has to dominate? Who can have Trump's respect? And ultimately, who can get us the best deal with Trump? That is not necessarily going to be the guy who, if you look at the old coverage of Carney, doesn't suffer fools and has a quick temper and likes things to be right. Like, we're putting a lot of faith in his ability to keep a cool, level head. And I don't know that he's answered these questions that we really know what it's going to be like when he deals with a guy like Trump. So I think it's worth noting this stuff for that reason.
I think anyone compared to Trump seems a bit more level-headed. At the same time, how many prime ministers in history have probably been angry or had, you know, been strict and forceful and expected things right away and punished people for not getting them right away? Look at Pierre Poilievre. I've been told, he has a photographic memory, apparently. He is quite intense with staff about remembering certain parts of the platform, and he will test them on their memorization, and he is unhappy when they're not able to remember certain points. The Conservative platform was released earlier this week, and you best believe he went through it with a fine-tooth comb, and you best believe he tested his staff on their understanding of each subset A, B, C, etc. Reporting from Paul Wells about Poilievre when staffers said they disagreed with him how hard he was going on the CBC, like, you know, eliminating the English arm entirely, that he told them abruptly that, you know, I'm not an Aaron O'Toole conservative, and if you don't agree with me, then, you know, you will be leaving my team. So you can get a bit of that there as well.
Yeah, I don't think anything that I've brought up today should in any way indicate that I think that it would be fun to have Pierre Poilievre for a boss. I mean, look, Poilievre, he became the leader of the Conservatives, much to the, like, despair, consternation, and rage of a lot of Conservatives who had kind of a never-Trump attitude about him. So I think that very much like Trump, he had a, well, I'm the boss now, and, like, I got a clean house. Like, unless you take a knee and kiss the ring and accept my dominance over this party, like, I won, you lost. My way of doing things, like, that is the Conservative Party. From now on, I am sure that he cracked skulls and accepted no dissent. And that's, I think, stuff he learned from Stephen Harper.
So maybe there's two Doms that could be a potential prime minister in coming days.
Yeah. I mean, I think that one thing I think about Poilievre is that people are like, oh, he's smart, he's smart. I don't know how smart he is, but he's cunning.
He knows politics. He's been in politics for 20-plus years, and he knows how to, what we just described, deal with all these various parties' interests.
You know, imagining the negotiation to come with Trump, like, who would lose their temper and who would adjust to the situation? But I don't know. It's a good question. What gets us out of there with the best deal? Adjusting to the situation and accepting the terms? Because, like Poilievre understands power. People, like, degrade his experience that he hasn't had an honest job. No, he's been a very hardworking guy in the industry of power, of politics. And, yes, wielding power is where you want to be, but bending to power is how you get there. He knows how to serve a more dominant force and sort of get what he needs. Now, is that going to be what Canada needs? That's a very good question as well. Is it better to have somebody who is used to getting his way? I don't know. It's going to be f***ing interesting either way.
One of the theories I've heard, Jesse, is that, so you remember, maybe this is a revealing dominant characteristic that Carney has, when he said, I'm not going to talk to Trump if he's going to put our sovereignty on the table. Like, I will not pick up the phone and talk to him until it's a civil conversation.
I'm just looking for respect at this point, acknowledgement of our sovereign nation.
And apparently he somehow had that conversation. I think a bunch of us journalists were surprised that coming out of that call, how weirdly civil it was, 51st state wasn't mentioned, all this stuff. One of the things that we've hypothesized, I don't have direct proof of this, is that he worked his contacts on Wall Street. Imagine the people he knows over there and that they were in contact with Trump and Trump sees in him a fellow, like, successful businessman who also has gone to Wimbledon and knows the players and knows how to make deals and has operated in some of the same places he has. So maybe that's, I don't know.
Let me actually talk to this little fantasy that you have in your head, because everybody has been creating their own version in their head of what that phone call was like.
Yeah.
And basically, like, deciding who's going to lead Canada on the basis of, like, of that, their imagination of that conversation, because we've watched Trump so carefully and we know that he, like, very quickly assesses who he's dealing with. Is this person a threat who I have to dominate? Is this a, like, Trudeau? He saw him as, like, let me get a photo op with this guy and then let me humiliate him.
Plaything.
He's a plaything. He's just, like, batting him around. Other people he just needs to actually get toxic with. And Carney, in my imagination and maybe other people's, was able to effectively present himself as something that was like, oh, this could kind of work. Like, you can't just come and, like, grovel because you won't have his respect, but you can't challenge him either. So if Carney was able to just be like, look, I'm a grown man. I respect you and I take you seriously. Like, this is my imagination of it. And, like, Trump came out of him like, yeah, this, like, I kind of got what ego satisfaction I needed out of this guy. That might be a play of the ego dynamics that worked out in that phone call. But as Polyev keeps pointing out, 4 days later, he came back to Canada anyhow with tariffs. So, like, who the f*** cares what happened on that phone call? Everyone forgets that right when Justin Trudeau first went for dinner at Mar-a-Lago, even Trudeau's detractors were saying that was a coup. That was amazing. Everybody wants to get on the inside track so that we're spared the tariffs. Trudeau locked down the dinner. He got the photo op with Trump. We're going to be spared. There was like a brief little window where everybody was congratulating Trudeau for this wonderful bit of politicking. And then we got hit anyhow, because there's the Trump who's just responding to, like, an interpersonal interaction. And then there's him just doing what he was going to do anyhow. So I worry about, like ultimately, who cares what happened? Like, look at what he does, not what he says, and so on and so forth.
There's the other conspiracy that he sees that Carney is weak. So he wants to bring on the prime minister that would be weaker so that he can then swallow.
I've heard that one too,
us.
That it's reverse psychology. And I actually don't credit him with that level of strategy. I also don't credit him with that level of interest in Canada. Like, look at what he's dealing with every day and what matters to him. I actually just take it at face value. He smacked Polyev publicly because Polyev said some anti-Trump stuff. And he kind of blessed Carney because Carney fluffed him. It's one way or the other, you know?
This is the thing with Polyev. For Trump, it's like, what did he say? He's like, you're not a MAGA guy.
Well, I think his biggest problem is he's not a MAGA guy, you know? I mean, he's really not. He's not a Trump guy at all. I don't like what he's saying about me. It's just not positive about me.
How dare you call yourself a conservative and not put the red hat on? If you don't have the red hat on, how dare you, sir? So then he's, you know, swats him away.
Yeah, even if that means being treasonous to your own country is, like, very sovereignty, you know? Mm. No, like, conservatism equals MAGA. MAGA
it's beyond
equals Trump.
That.
America equals Trump. MAGA. Yeah, like, it's...
It's countryless.
It's just fascism. It's just you're with it or you're against it. All right, there's some information for people and some opinions. Do with it what you will. Happy voting. All right, that is our show for today. Harrison, thank you for joining me. Everybody out there, you can email me about what you heard. I'm at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. I'm also posting some stuff here and there on Blue Sky. Harrison, where can people find you?
Well, you should mosey on over to www.thehub.ca. And then if you kind of like what you see, you can go to my Twitter account @HarrisonLohman.
This episode is produced by James Nicholson, mixing and mastering by Caleb Thompson. Our director of audio is Max Collins. This episode has been fact-checked by Sam Connert. I'm the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.